Hey, you want that to go?
I'll take three news takeouts, and two of them are right here in the studio. Louise Story, business and finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. Good morning, Louise.
Morning.
Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen is also here with a sports takeout a little bit later in the segment. Good morning.
Good morning.
Louise, let's begin with you. The Inspector General, a guy by the name of Neil Barofsky. I'm sure he's a fine, fine fellow, but these Inspector Generals are sort of paid to be very, very critical. Had a controversial thing to say about the TARP program. He is actually the person who's responsible for oversight of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, along with some others. But Neil Barofsky described the TARP as having saved our financial system from driving off a cliff back in 2008. But absent meaningful reform, we are still, the U.S. economy, driving on the same winding mountain road, but this time in a faster car. It sounds like he's warning that we're in worse shape, maybe, than we were a year ago.
He is, John. What he's saying is that, you know, this too-big-to-fail thing we've set up where everyone assumes now that if a bank gets in trouble, the government will bail it out, actually has the moral hazard of perhaps encouraging banks to take more risk because they know that they'll be saved. This guy, Neil Barofsky, is really interesting. He's kind of like the Kenneth Starr, you know, from the Clinton administration.
Right, sure.
He's a former U.S. attorney, and you know what he used to do was fight Colombian drug lords.
Oh, so
he's an interesting,
pull punches.
Tough person. Yeah. In fact, he apparently keeps the knife from someone who tried to kill him down in Colombia over his former work. So these banks, you know, should be a little afraid of him. But he has really taken some tough positions. He's accused the former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson of misleading the public about how bad the situation was in 08. He's been the only one who's required the banks under oath to tell us exactly how they spent those bailout funds. And so now for him to take this position that really nothing has changed, the government has not put anything meaningful in place to rein these banks in, either with pay or with financial reform. And he says that's very dangerous.
Well, demoralizing, and we will see if anything happens as a result of this Inspector General report. Louise Story, business and finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. Thanks.
Our next takeout comes to us from the laboratories of the University of Michigan. We have with us Sean Morrison. He's the director of the school's Center for Stem Cell Biology. And they think they've identified a frightening trend in research that could lead to some major breakthroughs in Parkinson's, cancer, or multiple sclerosis treatments. Joining us is Sean Morrison. So, Sean, what is it you found as you looked through the current stem cell research?
Well, under the Bush administration policy, very few stem cell lines were available for research. And of those, nobody really knew which human populations they were derived from. So we tested the most commonly used lines genetically and found that the vast majority of the lines were of European origin. A few were from the Middle East, probably from Israeli populations, and a few were from Asia. But they did not represent the diversity in our society, and there were certain populations that were notably underrepresented, like anybody of African descent.
Why does it matter? Does there make a difference between one cell and another?
Well, a fundamental principle of medical research is that we test new therapies on diverse patients because we never know when therapies could affect patients from different human populations differently. And so if embryonic stem cell research has the potential to change the future of medicine, we should be able to study diverse lines to make sure that the therapies that are developed have the intended effects in diverse backgrounds.
Do you know why we don't have diverse stem cells, and does that help you know how to fix it?
Well, in the first instance, we just needed to derive lines to be able to do the research, and we had very few available. Now, under the new National Institutes of Health policy, many new lines will be available to federally funded researchers, and now's the time when we can start considering issues like ensuring appropriate diversity exists out there. And for I think one of the steps that will be necessary would be to derive new lines for underrepresented groups, such as from people of African descent, to make sure that they're adequately represented in the research, and that's something we'd like to do at the University of Michigan.
That's interesting. Thanks so much. Sean Morrison is the director of the University of Michigan's Center for Stem Cell Biology.
Well, he's counting the hours here in the studio. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, the Super Bowl is on Sunday, right?
Yes, exciting.
And every day leading up to the Super Bowl, we're going to profile interesting players who have great stories to tell. We also have a basketball milestone in a moment. But first, the Saints, Jahari Evans, is that how you pronounce it?
Jahari Evans.
Jahari Evans. What's the story with him?
So he's an offensive lineman, which is he protects the quarterback.
Got
and
it.
He plays for the New Orleans Saints. In 2006, he came to the New Orleans Saints, which was a band of misfits. And he had previously been at Bloomsburg in Pennsylvania, which is a small Division II school, which is not quite the place that you normally get an NFL prospect. In high school, he had badly fractured his leg. Nobody was looking at him. So he ended up at this Division II school. He excels at this Division II school. And then somehow scouts came around him and picked him up, and they pulled him up. And the Saints took a chance on him as a rookie. Because of injuries to the veterans, he immediately was thrust into the starting position, and now he's on a team of destiny.
And he's an all-pro.
He's an all-pro.
So he goes from fractured knee at a bad school to essentially a walk-on with the Saints, the misfit Saints, and now he's an all-pro on his way to the Super Bowl.
And when he was in high school, he was a top 10 in his class. He had well over 1,000 in the SATs. So he's also a very likable guy. He really took to Bloomsburg. He goes back every year. He does a camp for offensive linemen. And in the beginning of the season, we talked about the importance of offensive linemen. And with a guy like quarterback Drew Brees behind you, you have to have a solid offensive line, and he's the anchor of that
he's
line.
He's the protector. Can you book him on the show? Sounds like a great guy.
He does let's sound like a great guy.
Give him a call. All right, get started on that. But let's talk about this milestone. Kobe Bryant becomes the Lakers' all-time points leader with 44 points last night.
He has more points than George Mikan, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Wilt Chamberlain. And for the sports, for the NBA franchise that's arguably one of the most dominant franchises sports history,
sure,
the Los Angeles Lakers, now Kobe Bryant is the leading scorer out of that group, and that's an astounding achievement.
That is so huge. Is that because of his longevity? Is that because of his per-game average? What?
I think it's also because he started before all of them. He came straight out of high school. So let's not forget that.
Okay, so he had that advantage.
Exactly.
But it's still an enormous milestone. Ibrahim Abdel-Mateen, thanks so much. Those are your takeouts. Coming up, we've been talking about how to rebuild Haiti. Today we talk about rebuilding housing. More in just a few minutes.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.